everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Friday Food Fight. My name is Wes Christian, and I am joined once again by Bart Christian, nationally recognized speaker. And Bart, why don't you do our introduction for this very special guest that we have this week?
Well, Wes, it is my honor to introduce Dr. Lynette Dotson. She's the Georgia State School Nutrition Director. And me and Lynette share some friends because she's from Carrollton, Georgia, where she served for 18 and a half years as the director of school nutrition there. And Lynette, I didn't realize that in reading this that you have been in 2013, you were the director of the year.
I was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that in the state of Georgia?
It was the state of Georgia.
That's quite an honor. And I know that you served in multiple roles in the Georgia School Nutrition Association. I used to always joke, my background is from Georgia, and when I was at Georgia, it was the GSFSA. And, the big joke was, you knew just how long somebody had been in the GSFSA by how quickly they could say GSFSA.
Very true.
Yeah. And I know you completed your PhD in hospitality and food service management from Iowa State. And you've got a master's degree from the University of Alabama. You've been on the Georgia Dietetic Licensing Board, and you're a past chair of the School Nutrition Dietetic Practice Group. I mean, that's quite a background, and now you serve as the state director. I love the quote that you had here. Yeah, and I'm just going to read it because I don't want to mess it up. It says, school nutrition is my passion, and it is in my honor to serve at the Georgia Department of Education as School Nutrition Director. Fueling Georgia's future with quality school meals is the state agency's focus in offering support to our local Georgia districts. I mean, I think passion is a key word there. And I think we all share that passion for child nutrition and for the child nutrition heroes that serve our kids every day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It truly has been my honor to be in this role. And having been in the local district before, I think makes it more relevant, for what's happening even currently. But it's definitely my passion. I kind of fell into it. And after 20 years, I can honestly say I probably live, breathe, and sleep school nutrition more than anything else, honestly, other than my family. But
well, I can relate to that because I've been in child nutrition for 25 years as a vendor. But my wife has worked in almost 12 years in a high school cafeteria. Mm-hmm. Both my kids have been raised up in the business, and I joke that child nutrition is kind of like the mafia. Once you get in, you just can't get out, and because it gets in your blood and gets in your heart. And
Yes. You
used a word, I listened to your welcome back today, and I got to tell you, that was very moving. That minute and a half, I actually got a tear in my eye while watching you greet the child nutrition professionals coming back this year. And you used the word resilient. So I want to ask you, what exactly does that word mean now in child nutrition? I mean, we all know what it means, but how is that so specific and so poignant for what we're going through right now?
Well, I think, honestly, school nutrition professionals are always very committed, I feel like, and dedicated to the children. I've watched that over the last 20 years as I've worked with different staff locally and then now in the state agency, getting to visit schools all around the state of Georgia. I think that's the common thread that I've seen, is that level of passion and commitment. And I think where the resiliency has come in, our program has gone through a lot of adaptation. Even since 2010, with the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act being approved and all the transition that was associated with that. And then now through the COVID-19 crisis, I think we've really seen the demand for that resilience in probably the biggest way ever in the history of our program.
Yep, I agree.
So let's jump into things here. Talk to us a little bit about what's been happening in the state of Georgia with local school nutrition departments since March, really, and since the whole COVID pandemic kind of really got started.
Well, on March 13th, when, the governor made the announcement of the state of emergency, we actually were at the state agency watching it. Georgia had submitted a waiver request on that Monday. I was actually in Washington, D.C. at the Legislative Action Conference, Unfortunately, I spent most of Monday in a room trying to help develop the waiver request to send off to them, because we kind of were anticipating what was potentially coming. We had some outbreaks within the metro area. And so when we got the approval Thursday night that our Georgia waiver was approved, we became very busy Friday trying to figure out from the state agency side how we could make sure our districts were covered through the regulatory piece of this to make a major shift, which really is back to that resilience part. They had to basically reinvent themselves almost overnight, definitely over a weekend. We spent that weekend as a state agency. There was many of us that worked all weekend long approving waiver requests from those local districts so that they could start feeding meals to students on Monday morning. So they did that. And so between Monday and Wednesday, most of our programs, you know, were up full force, you know, and of course, we didn't know a lot about coronavirus. We didn't know a lot about, you know, potentially the danger the staff was in. I think there again, that resiliency showed, because the school nutrition professionals, they really put themselves out there in this crisis for those kids. And some of them were fearful and some of them were worried. So we really tried to support them to think about strategically how we could curtail and limit exposure and risk to them. So again, our local directors are very, very smart and they come up with solutions for so much. And then our local educational environment with the principals and superintendents and teachers, bus drivers, they came alongside of those school nutrition staff and really figured out a way to implement an emergency feeding option, thanks to the USDA waivers that we received, that allowed us really from the middle of March until the end of May. We knew we served about 30 million meals. And then for the month of June, July, and then we don't even know all the numbers yet from August, but we're fairly confident that we've hit at least another 10 million meals. So we, wow, you know, we feel very confident that we've served about 40 million meals since March 16th in the state of Georgia. It may be a little higher. I tend to err on the conservative side when I give those numbers, but they have done an amazing job of being there for those families and those children in those communities.
Yeah, truly, truly frontline workers.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how has the state agency been supporting? You mentioned support for the local school districts. Talk to me a little bit about what that support has looked like. And maybe if you've seen anything that school districts in the state of Georgia have done that you think has been noteworthy, maybe mention a couple of those for some of our viewers to really help them with maybe some solutions in these tough times.
Sure. I think that's one of the things I've been very impressed with, is the different districts have applied things under those waivers in a little different way. So a couple things from the state agency side that we've done, the governor did appoint a K-12 work group that was in six different areas, one of those being school meals. So it was consisted, really the committee consisted of myself and the assistant director. And then the rest of it was local directors from throughout the state, as well as some allied affiliated organizations like Atlanta Food Bank, the Department of Agriculture. So we had a true kind of, group basically that was coming from different areas that were related to school meals in Georgia. And so part of what we did was we really tried to come up with the framework and things that needed to be considered depending on whatever model a local district was following. In Georgia, we have local control in our school districts. So the superintendents and the local school boards really are empowered to make a lot of decisions that are appropriate for them. And so what was interesting to watch during this time was seeing how some schools did pickup models for their school meals, some did delivery models, some did a blended approach. So, you know, they were very cognizant of what the needs were of their communities and tried to meet that. Some of them did evening pickups because they knew parents were working and they couldn't get to sites. So, you know, and even still some of our districts are doing that. And then as schools continue to unfold, you know, a lot of what we provide as a state agency is making sure that the program integrity is maintained, because there is a lot of federal dollars that support our program. And there's some definite parameters around the nutritional content of the meals, and as well as the counting and claiming of those meals, that really has to be maintained. And so making sure that the taxpayer dollars basically are used in the manner that they're intended to, which, you know, we know our directors have that purpose, you know, always, but we just support them in the challenges that they face. We had multiple director briefings where we would, you know, get on a call basically and field questions from our directors across the state, try to help them walk through what USDA had granted as flexibilities. So that's a lot of it too, is, you know, within those regulatory pieces, what we can help them figure out how to make those things work for their district is really a big part of our role.
So I want to ask you a question. You mentioned food banks, and we've had some guests on our show, and Mark Bordeaux and Chris Burkhart from Cleveland and from New York, and we were talking with both of them, and they both, over the summer, had developed coalitions with the local food banks to help, you know, not only take care of the children, obviously, but also to help take care of parents and people that are, you know, there's a lot of people struggling right now. Yes. And do you see that coalition or that partnership growing across the country if this, you know, if the pandemic and the school shutdowns and the unemployment continue to kind of hold static?
Oh, yes, I think so, Bart. I mean, we saw that even during the initial start of this health crisis. Our local food banks did come in a lot of cases and either fill the gaps for when school meals, for example, there were some districts that had spring breaks, you know, already planned. And of course the staff, you know, had really worked hard to get it up and going. So some of them kind of needed a little bit of a break. So we saw where food banks came in and filled that gap. Or like you said, a lot of times they came alongside of our school meal programs that were for the children 18 and under, and they provided support for the adults. And then a lot of our districts also worked with the USDA and continue to work with the USDA farmers family boxes. So then you had that additional support where the school meal program became kind of the hub in a lot of these communities for these additional resources to be distributed to the families, which I think was just extremely impressive. So those partnerships are very valuable.
Well, Wes, I'm going to jump ahead in the question a little bit because I want to ask this, you know, with, you know, participation is obviously low in some districts, you know, some of these waivers are expiring, you know, during the summer with Seamless Summer and things like that. It was very, very easy for the school to be that hub of feeding for the community. But now that that's, you're having to follow NSLP and you're not able to do the things you're able to do with Seamless Summer, the record keeping and whatnot, how do you see that working as school goes on to help these families that were, you know, that were coming to school and getting meals for their infants, their toddlers, all the way up to age of 18, and it didn't matter really what school they went to, they could go pretty much anywhere and get taken care of?
I think that has been a challenge for our local programs. You know, again, understanding that the health crisis is continuing, it's, I'm sure, very hard for families to understand that now we've shifted back to the National School Lunch and Breakfast Program from the Seamless Summer Program, and we're not able to support those additional children and those families that we were supporting over the last 5 or 6 months. And I know that's hard for our staff, you know, to see those babies that they've been supporting, if you will.
Exactly.
You know, and so, you know, we do appreciate there are a lot of waivers that have been extended through the school year. The one though that probably, you know, has been probably the hardest for people to adjust back to is the fact that Seamless Summer option, you know, expired once school started. And so feeding children in enrollment areas based on school. And then I think too, for us, we know connectivity is an issue. So when there's especially a delivery of meals or even bus routes being run, it's really hard to track that associated to those children that are in those communities. And, you know, using computer software and things like that to manage that. I spoke with one director last week that because you can't, they don't have the internet connectivity when they run their bus route for their virtual students. She was doing rosters, and she had, you know, spent a tremendous amount of time really establishing that paperwork that supports that meal service part. And she had no more gotten it done than all of a sudden the dynamics of who those children were now that were part of virtual learning changed. So she had to redo all of that. And so the frustration where these, you know, local directors and their staff have been working so hard to meet these needs, I think they continue to be challenged by some of those program requirements, and we certainly understand why they exist. But I think, you know, from the other side of the fence, as a family that receives those benefits, it may be a harder thing to understand, you know, why that's different.
And I had to jump off for just a second, so I apologize if this was already asked. What do you think the chances of universal feeding coming to pass, and what would I guess the impact do you see on this election coming up in November having on those efforts?
You would ask me such a politically charged question.
That's what we do here.
That I think is the $1 million question. To be honest, I think I've always wondered, you know, and I guess coming into school nutrition from the food industry outside of school and education, I was used to commercial food service and hospital food service management before I came to school nutrition. It's interesting to me that school meals are the one factor of public education that are still tied to family economics. So, you know, I think maybe this is an opportunity for people to maybe rethink some of that structure. I think school meals are such a valuable part of the school day. And so making those accessible to all children, I think knowing the nutritional composition of our meals and the benefits that that provide to children could be tremendously valuable to public education, you know, across our nation. So, you know, maybe this is a point that people seriously consider that option moving ahead. I hope so.
Me too.
Bart, do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm like her, you know, it's a politically charged question. And I think that the reality of it is I think nobody wants to see kids go hungry. And everybody wants to feed kids. I mean, I don't know of anybody that's so politically hard-hearted that they don't want to feed a child. I think the way we get there is going to be different based on who's in charge. But I think more than ever now that the opportunity, no matter who wins the election, the opportunity for SNA and for the states to begin to lobby really, really hard is here. Because, you know, Lynette, I've always known that child nutrition professionals are heroes. You've always known that. I've always known that. I've always known it in my heart, and I'm passionate about it. But the reality now is that the whole community knows it. The whole community knows it. They know the food. You know, I've talked to directors who have told me that the parents that were the hardest to deal with in their district, once all this started happening and they were beginning to see the food that the children were getting, suddenly became some of their biggest fans. Wow. And I think that's really the where we're at as far as that. We have a tremendous opportunity to really push our message, but we can't let it pass. That's my opinion. Right. No matter who wins.
I agree. I think this is an opportunity for our program, you know, because of the great work that's been done by these local districts in providing meals for their children. You know, I think this is the opportunity to hopefully rethink some of these things that we know have been a little bit challenging in just normal program operations.
Well, since that was a politically charged question, we'll change the topic back to something that is equally as uncomfortable to talk about. We'll just go back to COVID-19. What type of training resources is the State Department offering in regard to COVID-19? And really, what would you suggest for school districts outside of, you know, the normal hand washing and proper glove usage and things of that nature? What other types of trainings do you think districts should be giving an offering to their staff?
Well, we have been, you know, trying to be strategic in that even prior to COVID-19, we were looking at more of a blended training model where not everything we did was in person, but that we had some basically online learning available to local districts. In Georgia, you know, we have very strong professional standards that have been implemented thanks to iconic people in school nutrition like Dr. Josephine Martin and Annette Bomar-Hopgood. They had a vision for the fact that qualified leadership runs qualified programs. So because of that, as a state agency, you know, we had a repertoire of some training. I think getting that in more of an electronic version has been, you know, the transition, and we're not totally 100% there, but we are definitely working on that even as we speak. And when you mentioned some of those basic trainings, our food safety specialist actually did some really awesome videos that are available on our state agency website.
Oh, great.
Under school nutrition around hand washing, how to wear a mask appropriately, how to clean, the difference between cleaning, sanitizing, and disinfecting. So they're awesome resources that our districts used in some of their startup training. I even learned some things about wearing a mask, to be honest, after watching her, Dr. Ellen Steinberg's video. She just did a very practical, you know, delivery of that content. And then with that too, we've also been very purposeful. I think we're the only state agency in the nation that has an academic nutritionist. Our state school superintendent, Superintendent Richard Woods, is quite a visionary. And so before I came to the state agency, he had this vision of having someone that basically tied academic lessons back to food-based learning in the school meal program. And so we've had someone in that role for 3 years, but now we've gone to more of a virtual delivery. So she does a weekly, her name is Kelly Toon, so it's Tune In on Tuesdays. And then we actually have a farm to school specialist as well, Holly Thaw. And so she's been doing Harvest with Holly. And so
it's very cool.
It emphasizes the harvest of the month, points back to Georgia Grown. And so we did this initially to help parents kind of have those resources, but we know too, they're great resources for teachers. So those are just some kind of extra things that we've done at Department of Education, but you know, we're just constantly trying to think ahead and listening to our directors to see if we can meet their needs. Sometimes it's just a webinar where we're doing a Q&A and we walk through the practical application of some of the challenges that they're facing. Mm-hmm. Some of that's happened really quickly during this crisis. We knew sometimes it was a day or two and we knew we had to get the information out to our directors. So we did a director's briefing and we taped it. And so those that couldn't attend live could view it later. So again, just trying to be agile for the demands that they're facing so they have a better understanding of maybe how to manage some of those challenges.
I love that branding and the marketing that you're doing with those shows. I think that's fantastic. Just on a completely separate, I guess, kind of conversation topic really quickly, what type of branding and marketing have you at the state agency been doing that you have either seen been very successful during these tough times, or maybe you've seen other districts apply in their department to really help just let parents know that they can still eat and that they're still serving food to really help with those participation numbers?
It's a great question. So about a year ago, we brought in a strategic marketing communications manager, Kelly Cook, and she has local district experience as well. And so what we tried to do was align ourselves with Georgia Department of Education, which their focus is educating Georgia's future. So we really played up Fueling Georgia's Future, which actually had been started just before I came to the state agency, but we hadn't fully implemented it as our brand, if you will. And so what was cool to see during the COVID crisis even is the Georgia Department of Education kind of went one step further, and they developed around social media, really the hashtags of keep Georgia fed to keep Georgia learning. So those hashtags were also used and are still being used there on the DOE website. And so what we've tried to do is really amplify the work that's being done at the local level, because that's the story. What they're doing is what matters. So we just want to be able to take that and make sure that the local districts that are doing this great work, that people really know about it, and that we're able to really share that maybe on a little bit bigger scale than maybe some of the smaller districts especially can do. So we really see that as our purpose.
You know, don't you think that child nutrition, I mean, I've got a really good friend here in Arizona who's a just retired director, and she always was very passionate about the nutrition should really, it's looked at differently than instruction, and really the two are intertwined. You can't have, we just had on the cover of the School Nutrition Magazine that you can't have, that a hungry child can't learn. But, you know, and so does it make sense that as one of the things on top of universal feeding, on top of building on this, this momentum that we have, is build on the momentum that brings nutrition more in line with the instructional master plan of the district, and makes it an integral part of it, not just a department that services it, if I'm making any sense.
Yes, no, we agree 100%. And like I said, I think that's where we're so fortunate in Georgia. Superintendent Woods totally believes that and stresses that, and did actually before COVID-19. So we're very fortunate to have his leadership and be able to support that. He feels like it's a very valuable part of education. He says that quite frequently. So I think we're demonstrating that more and more in Georgia, and we're learning how to integrate, particularly when we look at that instructional piece and the food-based learning, teaching children academic standards using food is an awesome way for them to learn. I did that as a local director. We had a partnership with Food Corps, and that allowed us to do that. And we saw some of the subject areas that were really challenging for teachers to teach. Once we made that tie-in to food that was being served in our school meal program, it really brought about a transformation in education. And it's exciting to see that because it's tangible. And then we're really teaching them lifelong skills that then they're also taking back to their families. So, you know, we saw that firsthand. Not only did it impact that child, but it impacted the influence they had on their family. And even through this COVID-19 crisis, seeing families go back to more cooking at home and things like that, that's where some of those Tune In on Tuesdays and Harvest with Hollies have, you know, I think also been good. I've noticed even, you know, chefs are doing that, celebrity chefs are doing cooking things. So I think it just gives us that opportunity kind of to show parents, you know, how we're going to take care of the school meal piece during the day, but here's some options for you at night to cook with your children and enjoy, you know, a broader, array of nutritional foods.
And there's so many things we take for granted that you know, one of the things that when all this started and we put together the resources we did at School Food Handler, one of the things we got requested, I mean, almost immediately, was instructions for parents on how to care for and prepare meals. Right. Because that was one thing that just we put it together, but I was kind of like, everybody knows this stuff, don't they? But you know, they really don't know that, you know, this needs to go in the refrigerator at this temperature in this amount of time. This needs to stay frozen. This is only going to be good for so long. And I love the things you're doing with the shows for parents. I think it's great, because we don't realize what people don't know.
True. Very true. Yeah.
So I just in kind of closing here, as we're getting pretty close to our time for the show, but I'd love to know, and this is going to be an opinion question. So obviously none of us have a magic ball and we can't see into the future. But what do you foresee the long-term impact of COVID-19 having on school nutrition departments, good or bad? you know, changes that have been made, many of them might be good changes that stick around for a long time. Some of them might impact us in a not so great way. What do you think that long-term effect is going to be? And what type of advice would you have for school nutrition professionals to really kind of navigate through this crazy moment that we're in and really keep their eyes focused on the end game, which is just getting through this so that we can, you know, get back to serving kids the way that we are used to in person, in a line, and being able to really commune with them face to face?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I don't have a crystal ball. I wish I did, but I do think, and I tend to have this type of mindset about most things, I see a lot of opportunity. Even though we're faced with challenges, I think the outcome of this could be a very positive thing for school nutrition. I think our professionals need to stay the course. And as they say, keep the main thing the main thing. We're in the business of providing really good quality school meals that, you know, really take care of children and help them be focused to learn and be successful, hopefully teaching them lifelong skills that help them to be healthier adults even ultimately. But, you know, I have to believe that even though we've been in kind of, we were almost in a crisis feeding mode for a while, and I think we're starting to transition out of that a little bit, get back to some of the culinary aspects of our program, continue to focus on that. And then eventually, you know, I think to see that full integration of school meals as part of the educational structure at K-12 would be an incredible outcome of this. And I think we have that opportunity. I think we stay the course and we, again, focus on quality school meals and what we're doing for these children. And the other challenge is, you know, they're going to exist, but I think as long as we stay focused on our purpose, I think that helps us push forward through some of those challenges and come to the other side successfully.
It's the passion and the love for me that I tell people all the time. It's just remember why you're doing this. Remember what you loved about why you were doing this. And remember that we need each other desperately. And that, you know, even though we can't be close as we would like to be, even though we might be seeing the kids as close as we'd like to, you know, remember that you can see a smile in someone else's eyes and you can always hear a kind word through a mask. And just continue to do those things, because it's these are trying times. On us. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, this is our generation's World War II. This is our generation's Black Monday. This is our generation's Vietnam. This is it. And it's our challenge to help each other get through it. And I think that the passion, just like you said in your opening statement, you know, it's the passion and the love that's going to get us through this. And we just have to keep sharing that with each other.
Yeah. When you see the smiles on the kids' faces, it's definitely worth it, you know? Amen.
So last question for you, and then we will kind of wrap up here. And this is completely off script too, but I'm very curious on this one. In our business, we've noticed that there are a lot of new directors this year. Directors that had been in the position for many, many years have stepped down. New people have stepped into positions. And what a year to step into that role. What advice would you give to a new director, maybe in the state of Georgia, maybe just in any state across the country? What do you think is the most important thing that you could recommend to someone to keep in mind going into this little bit of a chaotic start to a school year?
That's an excellent comment, Wes. I mean, I've thought about that a lot through this with our newer directors, especially in Georgia. Veteran directors have struggled through this time, you know. So I think one thing that comes to mind, and I've shared this with all of our directors in Georgia, and that is I think it's really important, and I actually shared it with the state staff too, as a matter of fact. I think we have to give ourselves grace, give ourselves, you know, some grace in understanding that we're making the best decisions that we can in the moment. And things are changing almost on a daily basis. So things that we know now may be different than things that we know, and that's okay. Like I mentioned earlier, school nutrition professionals are resilient. So we have the capability of adjusting. We've demonstrated that for decades. So knowing, you know, coming into the business, I think new to support children in this role, hopefully they'll see that it's worth staying the course. And I think the other piece of it that I've really seen in the last 20 years and being in school nutrition is that we really are supportive of each other in school nutrition. We help each other succeed definitely as local directors. They work together very closely in Georgia. There's informal networks throughout our state, and I was part of that as a local director. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, our goal from the state agency is to also be that level of support so that, you know, we're there to really help them problem solve. So giving yourself grace and allowing yourself the opportunity to connect with those resources and people that are so valuable that may have some solutions, you know, to help with circumstances that maybe are very different than these folks have ever faced before.
Do not be afraid to call people and ask for help.
Yeah. Yes.
That is I spoke with the new director just last week, and she was kind of at her wit's end about a couple of things. Mm-hmm. And I gave her three directors to call, and she said, I just hate to bother people. And I said, these people will not be bothered. I said, this is the most giving industry I've ever been in. I said, they may tell you they got to call you back, but they will call you back. I said, because we truly are a child nutrition professionals in this together. And a lot of times it's easy to think you're on an island, but that's a preconceived notion because you're not.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything in closing that either of you would like to leave everyone with for today?
I think for me, Wes, what I'd just like to reiterate is, you know, and I've tried to share this in Georgia, especially in Georgia for our directors, but across the nation, I just want to say thank you very much for the commitment and dedication that all the school nutrition professionals have had to trying to navigate the challenges that they faced and will continue to face, we know, you know, through this next school year. I just can't honestly show my gratitude and appreciation for the commitment and the impact that they are having every day for children across our nation, and hearing those stories and seeing children's faces and families' faces that are so grateful for, you know, quality school meals being provided to them, I think is something we can't do enough. We just need to thank our professionals for what they're doing every day. And I personally appreciate it all.
I just echo that and say, God bless the great work you do every single day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Lynette, thank you so much for being on the show. Bart, always good to see you again. And we look forward to having you on the show again, potentially here in the next few, next few months. I'm sure that after the election and stuff, we'll get you on and have your opinion again on what's going on.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate y'all very much. And thank you for all the great work you're doing, truly, to tell the story of school nutrition. I think that's so important. And hopefully we'll keep getting a lot of attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll talk to you both very, very soon. Everyone, this has been another episode of Friday Food Fight. My name is Wes Christian, and we'll see you again next week at 12 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Take care.